This segment contains language which could offend some listeners.
And we end this science show with another example of overseas work illuminating Australian interests. In this case, the floods in Queensland and Victoria. How can a seemingly benign river or stream suddenly become a torrent? Mike Lamb at Caltech has a river in his lab. Could you describe, Mike, where we are?
We're in the new Earth Surface Dynamics Laboratory at Caltech, where we study river flow, sediment transport, and erosion.
And you have a huge chute that's about, what, 35 meters long?
It's about 20 meters long. It's a new flume that we're building to look at river processes at a range of slopes. And what makes it unique, besides being big, is that it's able to tilt very steeply, so up to about 30% slope. So at the downstream end, it pivots here, and at the upstream end, there are these hydraulic jacks. So if at full tilt, the head of the flume will be all the way up at the ceiling of this building.
That's pretty high up, and you'll shoot what, water, mud?
So we pump water. We're able to move rocks about 10 centimeters in diameter. And one of the goals of this facility is really to understand how rivers and debris flows work in steep mountain channels. Most experimental work of this type on rivers has been done for low-sloping rivers, where most people live, for good reason, but we know very little about how river channels work in steep environments.
Well, from what I've heard in the recent disasters we've had in Australia, it's also how, not steep ones, but ones on plains, there's lots to be learned about how their flow works as well.
Yes, I agree. The catastrophic events are, by nature, ones we don't get to observe very often. And so many of the erosion and transport rules we have been developed for conditions that we can go out and measure on a regular basis. But these very large events are often thought to be the most important in geologic history because they do a lot of work on the landscape. And although we haven't observed very many of them in terms of geologic time of shaping mountain ranges and plains, they could be very important. So these laboratory experiments allow us to simulate these type of flood events on our own time rather than waiting for nature.
It's a pretty big warehouse. Obviously been here some time. What was it used for?
I believe it was used to build one of the Keck telescopes that's on Mauna Kea. And so just recently in the last couple years, since I've come to Caltech, we've been transforming it into this river process lab.
Now, one of the aspects of your work which I find puzzling is the effect of fire on causing flow of silt and mud and whatever. How does that happen? Because I would have thought that the fire goes up and you're left with ash and that's it.
Well, at least in steep terrain that we have around California, a lot of the sediment is held back on the hill slopes by vegetation. And when that vegetation burns, the material is free to roll and bounce down the hill slopes and loads the channels with the sediment. And once that material is there, all it takes is a rainstorm to begin to move it. And sometimes it results in debris flows that can be catastrophic.
Well, let's continue our conversation outside while they're building around us. Now, here we are out in the sun again. The thing that's amazing about Southern California, even if you come in the winter, it's like a sunny day in Sydney or Melbourne. It's quite delightful. Well, when you go to the canyons, are they very big, deep canyons you look at?
Most of the canyons we've been looking at now are smaller, tractable canyons. So a canyon in Texas or Death Valley or Idaho, actually, are three case studies we've been working on. And they're all similar sized, about a couple kilometers long and maybe tens of meters deep. But they're all unique in that they likely have been carved out by catastrophic floods, either some of them in historic times due to engineering catastrophes such as reservoir overspill in Texas, and some of them due to geologic events such as in Idaho that were probably related to glacial lakes that burst.
And so you're saying the effect is almost immediate, it's very, very quick, a matter of days.
In some cases, these canyons can form in a matter of days, but this case in Texas does show a canyon that was carved in about 2 or 3 days, about 10 meters deep into rock, and that allows us to test some of our hypotheses for this rapid erosion.
Yes, Australia is considered the oldest continent, and it's been eroded over gigantic amounts of time, and so we're usually thinking in terms of very gradual processes, but knowing that things can happen very quickly, what are you putting that information to use for?
Well, one of the things we're trying to figure out is where you have the difference between canyons that are eroded slowly. Even some of the most rapidly eroding areas presently, Taiwan or the Himalayas, are eroding at millimeters or at most centimeter a year in the river channels. And so these events, these catastrophic floods that can erode meters in days, are truly exceptional. And one of the things that we've discovered is that part of the difference between the slow erosion and the fast erosion is the degree of which rocks are fractured. So many of these canyons that are cut rapidly have rock that is jointed before the flood is there, and so then the floodwaters only need to pick up the blocks that have been prefabricated for erosion.
And it behaves like shrapnel, smashing away.
Yeah, it able to pick up certainly many meter-sized blocks and carry them away. And in many of these cases, we think it's really the ability of the flow to move the material out of the canyon is setting the rate at which it's eroding. That's the limiting factor, rather than the wearing away of the rock.
How much do public officials make use of your information, and in what way, in planning?
Well, that's a good question. So most of our information goes out into peer-reviewed journal publications.
Straight science, yeah.
And in cases, we do collaborate and work with local agencies like the US Geological Survey.
In Australia, where we've had the most gigantic floods, people have been quite surprised at the power of the water and the mud and the flow of the silt. Do you think the public awareness of the power of water and the flow of silt and mud is not what it should be?
We're beginning to understand that rivers can behave very differently at different stages, and there's not often a gradual transition between a clear, flowing, gentle stream and one of these catastrophic floods. There are thresholds that are passed where the character can change very abruptly due to either the ability of the flow to pick up these blocks of rock, or when the silt and mud become so concentrated in the flow that particles hitting particles become more important than particles hitting the water. And when that happens, the physics change and the river becomes more like a debris flow or a mud flow. It's definitely on the forefront of science right now, trying to understand these transitional breaks and predict when they will occur.
Mike Lamb is Professor of Geology at Caltech. And next week, I'll talk to a geologist in Armidale, New South Wales, who says a handful of Earth contains more microorganisms than the total number of people who have existed ever. On Catalyst next Thursday at 8, Acid Wetlands. Mark Horsman rides again on ABC One. And on SBS television coming up at the end of May, Into the Universe with Stephen Hawking. That's on Tuesdays, where science lives on SBS. The Science Show is produced by David Fisher and Charlie McCune. And I hope you like our new theme. From Hungry Beast, I'm Robin Williams.
Yo, we're scientists. What we speak is true. Unlike Andrew Bolt, our work is peer-reviewed. Hey! Who's a climate scientist? I'm a climate scientist, an Anglican revivalist. No, a climate scientist. Feedback, like climate change on crack. Permafrost subtracts. Feedback. Methane release is whack. Feedback. Write a letter, then burn it. Feedback. Deny, let's deny this in your dreams. Cause climate change means greater extremes. Shit won't be the norm, heatwaves bigger, better storms.
The greenhouse effect is just a theory, sucker.
Yes, so is gravity. Float away, motherfucker! Climate scientist. I'm a climate scientist. A penny farthing cyclist. No, a climate scientist. A Lebanese typist. No!